Welcome to The Jump. We've got a packed show for you today, starting with Draymond and Kevin Durant chatting in the same room. Was their beef the reason KD left Golden State? And Summer League superlatives. Kendrick assigned some ESTs to the new blood. And if you like point guards, you're in the right place. Spencer Dinwiddie and Isaiah Thomas are stopping by. And we send off a legend, a personal hero. Jackie McMullen is calling it a career at the four letters. And we send her off in style. All that and more in an action-packed hour of The Jump. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Malika Andrews with Richard Jefferson, Kendrick Perkins. We have Ramona Shelburne, and we've got a lot to get to today, starting with some interesting comments about Kevin Durant's exit from the Warriors. If you remember, back in 2018, Durant and Draymond Green had an aggressive discussion during a Warriors-Clippers game that eventually led to Draymond being suspended for one game. And in an interview on Draymond's new show, Chips, KD and Draymond both questioned the staff's response to that incident.
It wasn't the argument. It was the way that everybody, Steve Kerr, act like it didn't happen. Bob Myers and tried to just discipline you and think that that would put the mask over everything. I really felt like that was such a big situation for us as a group. The first time we went through something like that, we had to get that all out.
We met the next morning and they said, all right, you slept on it, you ready to apologize. And I told them right then and there, I said, y'all about to f*** this up. I said, the only person that can make this right is me and Kay. And there's nothing that y'all can do, and y'all are going to f*** this up. And in my opinion, they f***ed it up.
I think so, too.
So, Ramona, what more can you tell us about this back and forth?
Well, look, this was a big incident, but I was questioning the premise of the question in itself, that the fallout from this was the reason that he left. The whole incident started because Draymond questioned him about leaving, mm-hmm. that it was sort of an open secret that KD had been talking about leaving, and that's what Draymond confronted him on. And then one of the things KD says in that comment there, where he says, you know, when I was watching The Last Dance, I they had this meeting where Scottie Pippen, when he asked out of the game, and then in the locker room afterwards, everybody said to Scottie, that wasn't cool, that wasn't cool. Well, the Warriors actually did have a meeting with the six core group of guys, with Kevin Durant, with Steph, with Clay, with Draymond. Everybody was in a room. About a week later, it was out on the road, and I think they got together and they had a big meeting, and they did hash that all out. It wasn't in front of the entire locker room, but the six core guys, they did get in a room and talk about it afterwards. So I think the whole premise of that setup was a little off. It feels like the whole fight started because Draymond said to KD, why are you leaving?
Right.
Yeah. Look, the thing that I find kind of curious about it, and I love the fact that they're having this conversation, because this is, when you look at the history of basketball, this is one of those things that people are always going to point to.
Right.
But my thing is this, is that that was expected. Like, you need a coach and you need a GM or the president to step in when there's something happens. And so when you look at players and you say, like, well, only people that can fix this are me and KD. Well, you guys had plenty of months to fix it. So, like, obviously, you're saying that them stepping in and what they should do in managerial position, and then you're saying, well, the only people that can fix it are fix it, but then you guys didn't fix it because he still ended up leaving. So I just feel like kind of passing the blame is like, well, it wasn't what I said. It wasn't your free agency. It was the way that management handled this. And I think that that's just kind of difficult to put it all on everybody. I think there was a lot of equal parts there.
Mm. Perk?
Well, I'm confused as usual. I mean, I thought the interview was great, 30 minutes of it. But here's the thing, right? I've been around. I played with a lot of Hall of Famers. I've been in a lot of locker rooms where guys actually got into it and guys actually got into fights. Hell, I'd have gotten into fights. And you talk it out and you move on, but it's part of it, right? You have a group of guys that be around each other for a long, extended period of time. At times, you're going to get tired of one another. The only thing that I didn't like about this whole interview is that KD and Draymond didn't hold themselves accountable. Like, this was an argument between those two. Like, Bob Myers and Steve Kerr didn't have a meeting with Draymond to encourage him to call Kevin Durant out of his name. I mean, at the end of the day, my kids, I have a 9-year-old and I have a 13-year-old. They argue. They come trying to fuss and tell on each other and tell me what's going on. And guess what I tell them? I don't want to hear. Y'all figure it out, because I don't want to figure out everything. I don't want to hear y'all arguing, but y'all figure it out. So at the end of the day, that's the only part I didn't like, is that those two didn't hold themselves accountable. Like, and all by minds that Steve Kerr tried to do was hash it out. I mean, asking Draymond to apologize for calling another grown man out of his name, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, and look, that wasn't the first time that Draymond, and look, his passion is something that is undeniable.
And like, talked about
and
it.
And talked about. Like, he knows that that's his strength, but at times he has to be able to dial that in, and that was one of those moments, but you understand it. My thing is this. I got into an actual fist fight with Kenyon Martin when I was a rookie, and he was a vet, and it wasn't the smartest thing I ever did. But
I would have taken Kmart.
100%. Luckily, Aaron Williams grabbed Kmart, and then I ended up punching Aaron Williams. I'm sorry about that, Adrian. And so, but the next day, Byron Scott brings us into the office, and it's like, what's going on? Like, you're a rookie, you're our second-year player, you guys are our wings, like, what's going on? And it was like, we explained it, we hashed it out, and then we became stronger and closer for it because we understood that we were willing to go that next level. I'm not saying that that situation has to dial in here, but to have management bring in players that have a scuffle, that is not unusual. To have you apologize, or if you were the one that was in the wrong, if you're not going to apologize or at least show some regret, then there's probably going to be a suspension and then we move on. So it's tough to say in hindsight this was their fault, but without them taking ownership, that was the one thing. The lack of accountability on their parts for the argument is kind of disconcerting.
Here's the question that I have. Throughout that whole interview, Draymond, I mean, obviously, you know, he let out some stuff should have been held confidential that happened with him and Bob Myers and Steve Kerr, et cetera, et cetera. He let loose Draymond being Draymond.
Yeah.
My thing is, camp is right around the corner. Mm. It's going to be another meeting when he walk in the building of that practice facility October the 1st or whatever the first day of training camp. So my question is, where do the Warriors and Draymond go from here?
I think they're fine, though.
Yeah.
Perk, honestly, if there's one thing about Draymond, like, they have a lot of incidents. Like that's part of what the Draymond experience is.
Mm.
He's very loyal, and then you have situations like this. But everybody knows Draymond. They know how loyal he is, how committed he is. Like, I don't think he has problems in that locker room. And I think what was interesting about that discussion is part of why that situation escalated in the first place was Draymond really runs that locker room. Mm. Draymond is – he was calling out KD. He was almost trying to sell it on the court. Like, that was the fallout there. And I just felt like KD is happy in Brooklyn. He's happy with his decision, right? Look, you cover him all the time. He's happy there.
It seems like he is. And in that interview, he also added, look, if we were discussing this after we had been healthy all season, perhaps this would have been a different discussion. That's one of the things that he mentioned there. But moving on to Joel Embiid, who became
a lot
$200 million nearly richer yesterday after signing a 4-year contract extension that takes his contract all the way until 2027. Ramona, you've been all over Embiid's road to this commitment. How did this get done?
Well, you know, this is interesting. This was a player representing himself. He doesn't have an agent right now. This was Joel Embiid doing the deal direct with the Sixers ownership, doing the deal directly with Daryl Morey. And you can do that when you're a max player, when you know you're going to get the bag. But there were some interesting provisions in this. His last contract, his last rookie contract, the extension he signed off that deal, had provisions, Malika, where if he suffered catastrophic injuries to his lower leg or his lower back, that they would essentially be covered. He would lose some money on that. There was incredible protections in that. Bobby Marks one time described it as the most complicated contract in NBA history. It's 35 pages of all the ways that if he suffered a catastrophic injury, like he missed the first 2 years of his career, so you understood why the Sixers did it. There's none of those protections in there this time. He got a fully guaranteed deal. He got the player option in year 4. I mean, this is a really good deal that he negotiated for himself.
Well, I just think Joel is happy. I think he wants to be in Philly. Obviously, he signed the deal and committed to him, but this is a great thing for the Philadelphia 76ers. This means that they're moving in the right direction. Now, I know that they have to solve the problem with Ben Simmons, and I feel like a coming to Jesus meeting, if they don't find a home for him, could help that. But to me, this just shows that Joel is committed to the organization, that he's not trying to go nowhere, that he wants to win in Philly. He embraces the role. He embraces the challenge. And I think this is a great deal for both sides.
Well, look, I agree. I think it's a great deal for both sides. But also, too, you wonder about if there was leverage, right? Mm-hmm. If there was leverage that could have been had. Now, he's got, like to Ramona's point, he was injured the first 2 years of his career. So he wants that security as quickly as possible. He wants to sign his name on the dotted line. But you talked about all the provisions. You know there was probably conversations about where direction are we going to go? Who is going to be my mate? Is it going to be Ben Simmons? Are you going to make a trade? But a lot of times when teams get security from their best player signing, you saw with Giannis last season, when he signs that extension, you're like, okay, he's committed to us. We can trade our draft picks because they're going to be late first round, and we can go get Drew Holiday, which ultimately wins the final piece. So when you have that commitment from Kawhi Leonard, when you have that commitment from Joel Embiid, it gives the team and the franchise opportunity to be like, okay, this is what we have now. Let's go forward.
Well, and speaking of that opportunity and kind of trying to put those pieces into place, the meetings that are being had, Ramona, as Ben Simmons still sits on the trading block, what's the latest you've heard about his relationship with the team?
Yeah, he's not calling them back. I mean, there's been reach outs to him. I know Embiid's reached out to him, Brand, Daryl Morey. Like, he's not engaging with the Sixers right now. You see him working out. He's getting ready for the season. He's in the gym with Tyrese Maxey. He's in the same gym with him all the time. But there's not a level of connection between Ben and the Sixers right now. And it's difficult for both sides, I think, because he would really benefit from a new start, I think, with everything that happened at the end of last year. I know he was stung by some of the words that people said about him and his performance in those series, but also his performance in those series. And so if they're ever going to move past it, I do think those conversations need to happen before training camp or before a potential deal here. But they're listening to offers. So far, I think the sense is you get one chance to trade a player this good.
Yeah.
And they would prefer not to. I mean, he's a great player.
Yeah.
Can you get him back to being the Ben Simmons who was second in Defensive Player of the Year voting? Probably could have won that, depending on how you look at the voting there. But Ben Simmons is a great player. I think they would like to be able to rehabilitate that relationship, but he's got to want to rehabilitate that too, and I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, and that's interesting, right? We've heard Adrian Wojnarowski report that Rich Paul, his agent, and the organization, they've sort of been in lockstep as they're trying to figure out what is going to be that next move, whether that continues to be in Philadelphia or, as you said, Ramona, whether that's going to be somewhere else as they continue to sort of work this out. But that's very, very interesting. Ramona, thank you so much for joining us. Coming up, new Wizards guard Spencer Dinwiddie joins the show to discuss his recovery playing with Bradley Beal and that $1 bonus that he wrote into his contract. Stick with us.
Yeah, I respect
that's
it.
That's a Richard type bonus.
Yeah, listen, I want something extra if we get that done.
I got it.
Will there still be a plan for you to play back-to-backs or not play back-to-backs?
You gotta ask them. Ask Tibbs.
He's playing.
He is playing. That was Kemba and Tibbs yesterday on Kemba's potential play in back-to-backs. Perk, do you like the fit with Kemba and your old coach Tibbs?
You know what? I like it. I don't know if I love it. I know Kemba is all smiles, but if he don't get up over them screens, those smiles are going to turn into frowns.
Oh, really quickly. Look, Kemba, if you never play in a back-to-back again, that is fine. Rest your body, get your knee right, make sure you're healthy. That is my thing, right? You want to help the Knicks in the postseason. Make sure you are able to play in the postseason unlike this past year. Let's skip on those back-to-backs, big fella.
And we now welcome in new Wizards guard Spencer Dinwiddie to the show. Thank you so much for joining us, Spencer. You partly tore your ACL last December, and less than a year later, you've been cleared to return to basketball activity. So can you just give us a little update on where you're at now on your comeback trail?
Playing one-on-one and two-on-two. Looking to continue to progress and, you know, get to D.C. in early September and ramp up to 5-on-5 from there.
Are you planning to be able to be available as soon as training camp starts? What's sort of the sense of when you think you're going to be fully able to join the Wizards?
I mean, that's going to kind of be up to the ramp-up plan of the Wizards in general. I've been working out with Kuz a little bit, working out with, you know, some other NBA guys, and I feel good, I feel fine, I feel healthy, but, you know, I still haven't played 5-on-5 just from the standpoint of being cautious for free agency.
Hey, Spence, a big perk here. First off, congratulations on getting the bag, all right? That's first thing
first. Thank you, brother.
But going down to Washington, trying to bring chocolate back to Chocolate City, we all know that they didn't have ball-dominant guards, right? John Wall, Russell Westbrook. I look at you as a combo guard, and I think you and Bradley Beal have a perfect fit. What are y'all expectations, or have y'all talked about y'all expectations going into next season?
I think we're going to look to lead a very deep group. I think we want to make the playoffs. And my job is to compliment Brad in any way that I can, to your point. A combo, a little bit of a departure from Russ and John, obviously. But, you know, have been an efficient and effective playmaker my time in Brooklyn and look to bring some of that to D.C.
Spence, Richard Jefferson here. Look, I know that you got hurt before James Harden got there, but watching your career and watching how you really changed the Nets franchise, you made that franchise and the crew that you were with, whether it was Joe Harris and D'Angelo Russell, that crew, you guys really turned things around. Do you have any, like, what ifs, like if we would have been able to stay healthy or if I would have been on that court? Look, as players, we have that, but do you have that mentality?
For sure. I mean, you look at the Nets roster, they got KD, who's arguably one of the greatest scorers of all time, probably him and Kareem, right? You got Harden, who has probably had the best offensive playmaking seasons of all time. You got Kyrie, who could be the most skilled of all time, right? And then, you know, me being kind of an amoeba and being able to fit in a lot of places and help out, and Joe being one of the best shooters in the league, I have no doubt that we would have won a championship last year. Obviously, that just wasn't in the cards for us. But Brooklyn was phenomenal for my career. They saved my career, and I was able to, you know, progress from there. And you know, when people believe in me and I have a chance to repay them, like, it typically works out well. And now, you know, D.C. is giving me that belief, and I hope to show that there as well.
So speaking of D.C., Spencer, in your contract with the Wizards, we got to break this down. You have a $1 championship bonus. How did that come about?
Yeah, you know, my agent Jason is a super smart guy, and you know, the way you have to kind of tier out bonuses, I guess you have to hit certain little tiers and things, and you know, them making the play-in bonus was so high in terms of the 50 games was just to make sure that I get you know, as much of the money as I deserve.
Every dollar. Yeah.
And so, you know, with a championship being probably a little bit harder achievement, but them still needing to have that slot filled, they made a dollar. And you know, credit both the Wizards and Jason for doing that. I mean, obviously, it's all in the rules, but it ends up being a funny meme, but I think it's just the Wizards doing me a solid at the end of the day.
Now, like, you talked about the Brooklyn Nets kind of, you know, saving your career and giving you that opportunity, and you bet on yourself, they bet on you, and it worked out well. What do you feel like your chances are to have that similar impact in Washington, helping to get that franchise back to, you know, playing high-level basketball?
You know, I think we definitely have a chance. You know, Beal led the league in scoring last year, right? Is one of the best scorers in the league. Obviously, is going to continue to do that. We have Gaffer Young, big runs, protects the rim, catch lobs. You got Rui and Kuz, two emerging young wings, right? Now you have depth with Trez and Pope and Aaron Holiday. And obviously, you know, if I come back in 19-20 form, and then I'm able to, you know, spread the ball around as well as be an efficient scorer, whether, you know, attacking the basket, getting to the line, et cetera, then we have a chance. I mean, anytime you have Beal on your team, you're going to have a puncher's chance, as long as everybody does their job and we can defend it at least a decent level.
Hey Spence, I tore my ACL while I was playing too, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Being sidelined for an extended period of time, not being able to play the game that you love so much, you have different thoughts that goes to your head, through your head, and you have a different type of appreciation for the game when you come back. I want to know, how tough was it through the process of you actually rehabbing, and how eager you were to want to get back on the floor?
Oh, super eager. I mean, anytime you had a game taken away from you, you know what I mean, you're excited to get back, as you said. I mean, you're hungry. Having been through a worse injury in terms of my ACL reconstruction in college, which was extremely hard, not having a partial, you know, obviously I was in a situation where I felt like I should, you know, come back extremely quickly. And I wanted to play in the championship game. I wanted to be a part of the run and do special things. So that was the focus the entire time. It was never missing the entire year. But, you know, it's the cards that ended up being dealt at the end of the day.
Spencer, we can't wait to watch you with the Wizards. It's really been a treat to kind of hear about your journey. I know you worked so incredibly hard and you were so ahead of schedule sort of every step of the way in this recovery. And that's really a testament to your work ethic. Thank you so much for joining us and good luck this season.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Coming up, we're going to speak to two-time All-Star and the recent 81-point Pro-Am scorer Isaiah Thomas on that performance, his efforts to return to the NBA, and much, much more. Stick around.
It's Isaiah Thomas at the Crossover Pro-Am.
Man, I've been just doing reconnaissance. They're still in our soul, but you are probably just complaining if you refuse to acknowledge it. Many years of rejection and false promises.
They welcome me. They welcome me.
Copy. Our next guest is two-time NBA All-Star who has been getting buckets on the Pro-Am circuit all summer, Isaiah Thomas. Welcome back to The Jump. Hopefully, Isaiah, can you hear me? This is Malika Andrews. We're just double-checking. All right. Well, we're having some technical difficulties, and we're hoping we can get Isaiah back in the show. But let's move on to Carmelo Anthony, the third overall pick in the 2003 NBA draft. And after LeBron James went first overall to the Cavs, the Pistons went with Darko Milicic over Carmelo Anthony for the second pick. Here's Melo on Basketball's All the Showtime's All the Smoke podcast.
Like, to this day, I still think about that.
Really?
Yeah, hell yeah. Because I'm like, they promised me. You know what I'm saying? Yo, we taking you. We taking
you.
I'm talking about all the way up to draft day. You understand? We taking you. So in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to Detroit. And then they won it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm honestly, if I'm there, I think we win it. They win another one.
Ooh, I think so too.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I wouldn't jump out there so we three people, but I think we go back to back.
So, Perk, let's play a little what if. What if Carmelo had went to the Pistons?
He'd have two rings. It's no doubt in my mind. I think when you look at, you know, the culture that Detroit had before Melo was drafted in 2003, and if they would have took him with the number two pick, they would have won it that year, and I thought they would have repeated. And then all of a sudden, you got a young guy that has been around a great group of vets like Chauncey Billups, Rip Hamilton, Tayshaun Prince, Ben Wallace, Rasheed Wallace, Lindsey Hunter, guys that are the pros to teach them how to be a true professional. Everyone knew how talented Carmelo was. I mean, he was just coming off a national championship with Syracuse. And now, because we all have to remember with that Detroit team, they had like a 4 or 5 year run where they were actually a top seed in the Eastern Conference and a top team in the NBA. So at some point, Chauncey and them could have hand the keys over to Carmelo, and the team and that franchise would have been in good hands. Hmm. And look, they still would have been eye candy. Who knows who would have came to Detroit to play with Carmelo? We might be talking about Melo as a guy that started his career with Detroit and finished his career with Detroit.
What do you think, Richard?
I hate what-if games. This is literally my least favorite, because let's take it a little bit on the history
Who
lesson.
Cares?
Listen,
who cares?
You hush your mouth. Listen, when they drafted Tayshaun Prince the year before. Now, I played against them in the conference finals the year before Carmelo got drafted. Tayshaun Prince played great. Do you know what they were lacking? They were lacking a power forward. And so what did they do? They went out and they drafted Darko, right? That they could have drafted Chris Bosh. They could have drafted a number of people. But the person that they got at the All-Star break was who? Rasheed Wallace that year. So if we're going to play the what-if game, if they would have drafted Carmelo, maybe they don't get Rasheed Wallace. And we all know how important Rasheed Wallace. Oh, we want to sit here and talk about two championships for Carmelo if in the what-if game, if they would have drafted him, but we don't want to look at the subsequent things that happened after getting Rasheed Wallace at the All-Star break, which ultimately is we lost to them in seven. They went on to win a championship that year. So you don't know if one domino was going to lead to another one. Would he have been in a much better spot had he gone to Detroit? Yes. But let's not gloss over his Denver team. He went to a conference finals. He went to multiple postseasons. It's not like he showed up. It was in a trash situation. He had an amazing career in Denver. Yeah, he didn't win a championship, but there was also other dominoes that would have fallen he would have gone to Detroit.
Well, first of all, me and Malika are not glossing over his Denver years. Mm. He the one brought it up on All the Smoke, and we're just talking about it. He said that he still think about that to this day. They asked him about if he was the number two pick, about going to Pistons. We didn't come up with it, Richard. We're just piggybacking off of something that Carmelo said. Mm. So don't be coming on here with that sassy attitude.
Why are you yelling?
Listen. Don't come on here with that sassy attitude towards me and Malika talking about what if and what if and we playing the what if
this
game.
Is what
we're playing it because Carmelo brought it up on All the Smoke.
Well, you know, Perk, that Richard just can't help himself. He's got to bring some sass to it. That's just who he is. That's what he does. I remember reading in a story that our friend Howard Beck wrote that LeBron James at one point during that draft kind of turned to him and said, this is you. This is your spot. That's something that he reported. And so it's interesting, right, to kind of think about those things. But it seems like Carmelo now is sort of rolling with this persona of this mindset of, I like where I am now. I like where I'm going. This has all kind of come together at the right time. He said that in his press conference with the Lakers, that potentially at another point, this wouldn't have been the right time. So they're feeling like he's feeling like at least now is sort of the right time for those sort of dominoes to come together. He's done some growing up in this league. But Richard, I know that what you want is more of what Kendrick Perkins thinks and what he has today. So we're going to bring back Kendrick Perkins and he's going to give us some of his summer league superlatives. What makes the biggest draft dance statement? Who else deserves their flowers? Stick around. You're watching The Jump. Welcome back to The Jump. We did it. Our technical difficulties are solved. So our next guest is a two-time NBA All-Star who's been getting buckets on the Pro-Am circuit all summer long. Isaiah Thomas, you can hear me now. Welcome back to The Jump.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, we see you in beautiful Tacoma, Washington, but we've also seen you light it up with dominant offensive performances. What have these Pro-Am experiences, what have they been like for you?
It's been very cool just because, like, I'm a student of the game. I love basketball so much. I've usually always play in pro-ams or LA Fitness, the YMCA. I'm playing everywhere. This has been the first, you know, summer I've been completely healthy and been allowed to play in those things. So that's all it is. I took a few year hiatus from the summer pro leagues. And now, you know, I've been back trying to put on, you know, trying to put on some good performances for the people who come to watch.
Well, you've certainly been putting on a show, and you're no stranger to proving yourself. You've done it over and over again. But the ultimate goal for you, it remains to get back in the NBA?
Yeah, that's the only goal. That's the only goal is to be in the NBA and to be on the roster. I know I got the talent to do it. Yeah. I'm finally healthy. You know, I'm just, you know, waiting on the opportunity. And I know at some point when it does come, I'm going to take full advantage of it, and I'm going to do it with a smile on my face.
So what workouts have you done with NBA teams or NBA players recently, and how did they go?
I've worked out with some teams. They went really well. I mean, teams have seen me move. They just seen me be who I am, and that's what the biggest thing for me is, to get it out there so people can see that I'm healthy, the people to see I have no restraints, I have no restrictions. I'm 100% ready to go, but I've been working out with guys. I've been ready, and you know, I'm just waiting on the opportunity. I'm waiting on the right opportunity for me to showcase my skills and be able to have an opportunity to, you know, play at the highest level and show that I can still compete at a very high level.
You know, I got to push you just a little bit. Are there any particular players, teams, or feedback that you've gotten that you can share with us?
I mean, I want to try to keep that in-house. I mean, I seen there was something out there the other day. I'm just trying to get in the gym with anybody, really. You know, just for everybody to see it. like I said, I'm a gym rat. So I've been in the gym with some highly talented guys. You know, I'll let the world figure that out, though.
You can give us a wink if that's true. Give us a little, like, a nose ring. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've been in the gym with who you think I've been in the gym with.
Yeah, there we go. Well, before we let you go, Isaiah, and I really appreciate you joining us, ESPN's The Undefeated is coming out with a 30 for 30 podcast on your friend, the late rapper Nipsey Hussle, entitled The King of Crenshaw, and you were a part of this podcast. And I just want you to take a listen to the trailer real quick.
Who was Nipsey Hussle? Far more than a famous rapper.
He was a visionary.
The ultimate hustler.
A blueprint for greatness.
An inspiration.
The King of Crenshaw.
Nipsey was a rising star in rap, but he also poured his time, money, and resources into Crenshaw's preservation and evolution.
Athletes resonated with and were inspired by the concept of the marathon, especially players in the NBA.
It's about endurance, it's about preparing, it's about mentally breaking through your barriers.
For us, it was all about coming together, figuring out how we could better our city.
What he was speaking on was really what I was going through in terms of running my race.
He was one of our superheroes.
Nipsey saw potential. He saw a community. He saw hope.
So, Isaiah, when you got drafted, you got a tattoo that reads TMC, the marathon continues. It's a saying, it's a lifestyle that Nipsey instilled in you, and you two were incredibly close. What was that relationship like, and how are you carrying him with you through this chapter of your life and career?
Man, I miss my bro. That was one of my dopest friendships that I've had in my life because it was so real and genuine. We were on the same paths, but, you know, like different roles. Mm. And I felt like, you know, he was one of the realest people that I've ever been around, that I've ever met, that I've ever conversated with. And I'm just happy to be able to call him a friend. You know, it sucks, you know, it's unfortunate the things that happened to him, but I'm just glad that everybody's giving him the love that he deserves because he was one of a kind. And I think, you know, he was just reaching somewhat of his potential. Like, we only seen a little bit. Mm. I think he was going to take over not just the rap game, but the whole world in terms of his inspiration, in terms of, you know, what he stood for. So for me, man, I just try to, you know, keep his name alive. I try to keep his music alive and you know, doing whatever I can to, you know, let the world dig into what he was really about. You know, the marathon is what he is about. It's a lifestyle. It's something that I go about since 2008. When I first met Nipsey, and he's been everything to me, like the most genuine human being that I've ever been around. And I miss my guy.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I'm really looking forward to hearing the podcast in its totality. And thank you, Isaiah, for joining us. Best of luck going forward.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. You'll see me on the NBA court this year.
We'll see you on an NBA court this year. We're going to take that as an IT guarantee.
Yeah, that's a guarantee.
Well, we need to take a break, but first, here's a distant replay on this date from 2020. Bubble Giannis. Take a look.
During the regular season, Adetokounmpo on the spin and a hammer.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. 1 point lead for Milwaukee.
And the one positive, that elbow to the chin, a lot of times.
The Sacramento Kings are the Summer League champs after their dominating 100-67 rout of the Boston Celtics. Davion Mitchell continued to show out and helped hold Peyton Pritchard to just 6 points on 9 shots. And Louis King won the tourney MVP honors. We now welcome in Hall of Famer, author, Celtics expert, and soon-to-be retiree Jackie McMullen. And Jackie, the Celtics have had a quiet offseason up to this point, but they did turn some heads in the Summer League with some of their young talent. And again, they made it to a championship game before falling to Sacramento. So it was an impressive run. What are your takeaways from these last few weeks in Vegas for the Celtics?
Malika, it really does start with Peyton Pritchard. Now, we knew he had range, but did he have the poise and the command to run a team and to get the ball to his teammates and to facilitate? And I think that's what was on display in Summer League, which is something that we haven't seen a lot of because he hasn't had the minutes, and that's what Summer League's all about. The other one I thought really stood out was Aaron Nesmith, who was injured a lot last year as a rookie, but the Celtics really like him. They like his upside, and I think he showed that he could score a bunch of different ways. He's a nice, long, versatile defender. I think he's going to get a lot of minutes for the Celtics this year. And with some of the other guys going out the door, like Evan Fournier, I think there's some minutes there for Aaron Nesmith.
Absolutely. Let's stick with the Celtics. And earlier this week, Marcus Smart, he inked a four-year, $77 million extension with the Celtics. And he's the longest tenured Celtic on the roster and has been the lifeblood of that franchise in the past. But Jackie, what does this mean for the Celtics in the future?
Well, I think in the immediate future, Malika, the idea is that he becomes part of the core with Jaylen Brown and Tatum. But here's the interesting thing about this contract. The time has been truncated during the offseason because of the pandemic. So by signing him now, what the Celtics have done is given themselves a little wiggle room if they decide they're going to move on from Smart. And that would only be for a blockbuster like Bradley Beal, who we know the Celtics are lusting after. And by the way, just about everybody else in the league is lusting after. They now could trade Marcus Smart if they were able to land a superstar of Beal's caliber. So that's pretty significant.
Well, we know they have their eye on some superstars like you just mentioned. And Jackie, with today being your last day on the Jump, we put together a little tribute for her before she retires from the company. So here it is.
This year's recipient for the Penn ESPN Lifetime Achievement Award for Literary Sports Writing recognizes an NBA reporting legend and the first female sports writer to receive this lifetime honor. Please welcome to the stage this year's winner, a lady who shoots and scores on the page, whose words are all net, Jackie Mack McMullen.
I was 21 years old when I was hired by the Boston Globe.
The Boston Globe's Jackie McMullen joins us now.
The NBA drug policy states that a team physician cannot make a player take a drug test against his will.
As the years passed and I switched jobs, I wondered if I would ever get an opportunity to spread my literary wings like that ever again. But at the urging of the great John Walsh, I plunged into a full-time job at ESPN.
Jackie McMullen, our NBA analyst, on the reasons behind Riley's departure. Jackie.
Well, anyone that's been following the Knicks this year can't really call this a surprise.
Let's look at Oscar Robertson. Take me through what you're watching here.
I seriously have stolen all of these moves from these great players. I mean, it's
the defending champion of the Boston Marathon takes a drink out of our cooler, hangs out with us for a few minutes, takes a picture with my 13-month-old daughter, and then goes on his merry way. And you know, the thing that I thought of in the aftermath of this horrible thing that's happened is that'll probably never happen again.
Jackie Mack, all-time high for LeBron.
I am calling shenanigans. He wanted to be part of the club, Scott, and he was never going to be one of the guys on that team.
But how hard is it to be someone who's shy and would rather sort of stand back and not be noticed, and yet everywhere you go, you're noticed?
It's hard, but I've gotten used to it.
Everyone who watches the show is, of course, familiar with the Hall of Famer Jackie and her work. Basketball, a love story, whether it's discrimination they faced, whether it's just lack of opportunity with, you know, wealth or anything else, they fought to play the game.
They did. And, you know, the love of the game, I really came through with the women, I think, because, as we all know, and it's in the news a lot these days, the women still don't get the equity that we all feel, the financial equity that they feel they should get. But as my career begins to wind down, the one thing that I always hoped was that I would remember first and foremost as a writer. And thanks to these Penn judges and every single one of you in this room, my dream has come true. Thank you.
Jackie.
Thank you, Jackie.
I don't know that there's better words than thank you. Go ahead, Perk.
You know what, Jackie, I just want to say thank you for embracing me my 8.5 years when I was in Boston. And I definitely appreciate you never writing a bad thing about me ever in the Boston Globe. And I appreciate you writing everything bad. I appreciate you writing everything bad about Richard when he came into town. That made my day. But seriously, though, Jackie, I want to say thank you. And I hope, you know, you enjoy retirement, but you have really been a blessing to the entire media family.
Yeah, and the one thing that I want to echo is seeing those old videos, the older videos of like the classic ESPN. Right, no, but what's cool is that like you were part of that golden era. Mm-hmm. Like you covered the Celtics versus the Lakers. Like you were in those locker rooms when the big three is, you see Kevin Garnett. And just like you, your voice was always one that was so respected that even as like a teenager, when you would start talking, the minute you were done, I felt like I was smarter and I learned something about the game that I loved so much. And so, you know, just from watching you for so long and the fact that I get to now work with you and also get to say goodbye, it's a special, special space for me. Thank you.
Jackie,
thank you so much, Richard. I'm speechless, people. Yeah.
I know that you've touched so many people in this industry, but I do want to say that I can still, as much progress as we have made, I can still count on my two hands the women that cover this league as a writer full time. And you were one of the first. You broke down barriers so that we, as women, could be standing in locker rooms. You've told me stories that have resonated with me as they have evolved in locker rooms, but the things that you had to do to get to where you are, whether people agree or disagree with some of your opinions, they know they are informed. But more than that, you are one of the most respected, most talented journalists that has ever walked the halls of ESPN. And the fact that you did it in pumps, that you did it when it was a boys club, that means so very much to me personally, Jackie. And I don't know that I can thank you enough.
Well, it's been a pleasure to know you, Malika. You're on a rocket ship straight to the moon, and I'll be cheering you every step of the way.
Well, we'll be cheering you right back. We so appreciate you. Thanks to all our guests today, especially you, Jackie McMullen, who's been a staple of NBA media coverage for 40 years, a true pioneer for all journalists in this industry. From everyone here at The Jump, thank you so much. You will be sincerely missed. We wish you nothing but the best of luck.
Well, thank you very much. I love this show. It's been a blast to be with all of you. And I can't wait to see what you guys do next. I'll be watching.